first, laws regarding abortion in Wisconsin have become more restrictive in recent years. In 2013, Governor Walker signed a bill into law requiring women to have an ultrasound before undergoing an abortion. And in 2015, he approved a 20-week abortion ban in the state.
To check up on those changes, our next guest talked to those directly affected by the issue. In addition to talking with lawmakers on both sides of the debate, she visited with patients and doctors at one of the three facilities in the state that offer abortion services.
Jesse O'Poyan covers state government and politics for the Capital Times. Her recent cover story for the paper is called Inside Planned Parenthood. Jesse, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So what led you to visit Planned Parenthood for your story and to take a really patient-focused look at abortions in the state?
Yeah, well, a few months ago, I did a story looking at, I write about these laws and these policies quite a bit. Anytime a new one's introduced, anytime, you know, there's any sort of debate about it, I write about them. And it's usually from the perspective of whatever the legislative debate is on the floor. So a few months ago, I did a story kind of looking at some of the effects of these laws over the years in a cumulative fashion. But I felt like it was still a little bit more politics focused. And so I wanted to take a look at this from a more practical focus and see, you know, how are these laws actually being implemented? What was the intention when they were introduced and passed? Are they serving the intended purpose? And how are they affecting the way that this service is provided?
So I want to get to what the patients that you did talk to said. But, you know, in your piece, it says that they did not all of the people you talked to were seeking an abortion. They were just using Planned Parenthood services. And you spoke to, I believe, seven people. You know, did they have some, you know, hesitation talking to you about this?
You know, I'm really surprised. I'm still surprised by how many women were really willing to let me do this. I can't imagine letting a reporter sit in on an annual physical with me. So I was surprised that so many were willing to do it. You know, we just kind of approached it patient by patient, and it was the majority who were there seeking abortion services. It was just one woman who wanted to get an ultrasound there. But yeah, you know, some of them I talked to and went through kind of the whole process from the beginning. And some of them I actually ended up talking to because they were frustrated when they were talking to the nurse that was with them. And the nurse asked, well, you know, we have a reporter who's in the office today if you'd like to talk to her. And some of the women in the story were just so frustrated during the process that they wanted to talk to me since I was there.
Can you just expand a little on what some of their frustrations were?
Yeah. You know, the accumulation of all of these laws is, it sort of impacts your visit at every, aspect of it. So, you know, the ultrasound requirement is one thing that, you know, is part of, you know, you may expect it in medicine, but there's, you're being told, you know, you have to do this because of the state law. So it's not just that you have to have an ultrasound, but you're going to have the image on the screen described to you and have the screen turned toward you. So some women were not necessarily bothered by that individually, but kind of questioned why it had to happen that way. And then, you know, the other aspects of it are just there are things that a doctor will go over with the patient when they talk about the risks of the procedure, as they would with any medical procedure. And the doctors kind of make a point to make clear what they're telling patients because they think that it's medically accurate and medically necessary, and what they're telling patients because state law requires them to, but they may disagree with it. And usually it was at that point that some of the women were frustrated and wondering, you know, why do you have to tell me this? And what is that law? And, you know, why does that affect this? One thing in particular that one woman was confused about was one of the more recent laws requires the doctors to tell women the probable post-fertilization age of the fetus as opposed to the gestational age. You know, it's something that the doctors wouldn't have done if not for the state law. And so that was something that just, you know, kind of another question for the patients who were there.
So can you really quickly clarify what the difference between those two things are?
Yeah, so the gestational age is how doctors generally measure pregnancies based on the last period. The probable post-fertilization age is tied more toward when conception actually occurred, and that's not something that doctors tend to measure in obstetrics, but it is something that is often referred to when we look at laws like the 20-week bans on abortion. Those are usually tied to probable post-fertilization, which is usually a little bit earlier than the gestational age.
Sure, and thanks for clarifying that, Jesse. And I want to remind our listeners that we're talking to Jesse O'Poyan. She covers state government and politics for the Capital Times. She had a recent cover story in the Cap Times called Inside Planned Parenthood, where she spoke with patients and doctors about, you know, trying to navigate the abortion laws in Wisconsin. And so, Jesse, there are two pretty big criteria in the state. One, which you just mentioned, which is that the state bans abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. And then there's also the fact that women have to go and visit the doctor twice. So how does, you know, those sort of laws are pretty time sensitive. So how does that impact access for women in the state?
Yeah, you know, the 20-week one definitely has, just from a numbers perspective, it's going to impact fewer women just because abortions at that stage of a pregnancy are pretty rare. It's usually when there's some sort of fetal anomaly or some sort of illness that becomes a risk. But when we look at things like the requirement to return to the same doctor, visit multiple times, you know, that starts to become a little bit more complicated for women who are coming from out of town, usually. So there's two different procedures or different ways to have an abortion. You can have the in-clinic suction procedure, or you can take a medication. The thing with the medication now is that you have to return and see the original physician that you had your first appointment with. So that starts to get complicated for women who are usually coming in pretty early in their pregnancy, but they may have to wait a few weeks later. The rate of effectiveness goes down at that point. It's obviously, you know, when you're scheduling any procedure, any doctor's visit, just trying to time out scheduling with your schedule can be a problem if you've got work or you've got childcare to worry about. You know, I think something that people don't think about often is that, you know, a lot of women who are having abortions do already have children and they are dealing with childcare for the children they already have. So things like that all come into play. It results in people making a couple different visits, sometimes driving multiple hours in order to do that. Of course, the people who pass those laws will say they really want to make sure that women are thinking this through, that they're given every single option, that they're aware of all of those options, that maybe there's a chance to persuade a woman to make a different choice before she ultimately gets to that point.
And, you know, part of this big conversation is that this is policy playing out in everyday lives. And you spoke with people on both sides of this debate. And I don't want to downplay the fact that, you know, this is still a conversation that many people, you know, have really passionate views and opinions on. So let's start with, you know, the lawmakers that have put this in place. You know, what has been, you got into a little bit of their rationale as to why they wanted to pursue this, but, you know, what's really guiding them in the legislature?
Yeah, I mean, this is, as everyone knows, this is an incredibly difficult issue because I think most people who have a strong opinion on it are not likely to be swayed, no matter how the conversation goes. And that's what it ultimately comes down to in a lot of the debate, is it's just two sides that aren't going to see eye to eye on it. But the lawmakers who have authored these laws, or the groups that have promoted them, you know, ultimately they'll tell you what they want to see is fewer abortions. And we should note, you know, that Wisconsin has seen fewer abortions. It's declined about 23% the rate here since 2010. So they point to that as a sign of success. They say, you know, we're making policy changes and we're having a conversation that's making people think about what all of their options are, that's guiding them in the direction of, you know, ultimately carrying that pregnancy to term, whether they're keeping the baby or they're giving it up for adoption. But that's, you know, that seems to be sort of the end goal. You know, you get into specifics on some of these laws. I think we've heard more of this in other states and other debates where, you know, there's discussion of, you know, just trying to offer medically accurate information. And that's another element of it. But I think the end goal is that the people who are promoting these laws and passing them want to see fewer abortions.
Jesse, we'll have to leave it there for right now. Jesse, thank you so much for joining us. Jesse Opoyan is a state government reporter for the Capital Times. She was with us to talk about how Wisconsin's abortion laws are affecting patients and doctors at the state's Planned Parenthood clinics.
Stick around. There's more to come here on Central Time.